jobs, or if you yourself have been, like, you should contact your state representative mm-hmm. right now, or, you know, whenever you can within the next, you know, week or so, and let them know that you voice your support for this bill.
Yeah.
And make sure, you know, it's House Bill 3409, and that would basically provide meager, small assistance to yes. folks who have been working to keep our society from falling apart during this time.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot more that can be said on this, and I'm sure we will be discussing this as that moves through the state house. But again, just, you know, if you do support that, if you're someone who could potentially benefit from that, contact your state representative and let them know that you want this passed and this is a priority for you. We are, of course, out of time here. We will pick it back up next month in July, on the third Monday of July. But thank you so much for tuning in to Labor Radio. Again, I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
And until next time, have a great day.
Hi, I'm David Brower, David R. Brower. And I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States. And that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland. And I wish you had a lot more company.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. We are very honored tonight to have Ebony Morgan with Cahoots from Eugene on. Ebony, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you so much for having me. I am delighted to be here with you.
Thank you. So we've been hearing a lot about Cahoots. I mean, it's been in the news for the last year or so, ever since the movement for Black Lives and Black Lives Matter, like, really raised up the issue of alternatives to police for a critical response to a whole bunch of situations where we really don't need the police. But let's just kind of start with the basics. What is Cahoots?
Cahoots is a mobile crisis response team. So we respond in pairs of two. We bring a medical professional and a crisis worker to every call, and we go to behavioral health calls. If something comes in and someone's having a mental health crisis or a crisis related to substance use or houselessness or something that is not necessary to have a law enforcement response go to, we go instead. And we are dispatched by the same dispatchers to these calls that are more appropriate for people that are trained in those areas to respond to. And we bring our radios that we have for dispatch, but other than that, it's just ourselves. We wear sweaters with our logo and jeans sometimes, and we just look very casual because our whole role in those situations is to de-escalate and provide care and work with the client, providing client-centered care to figure out what the best outcome is going to be for them. And to remain fully trauma-informed, knowing that when you're in a crisis, power dynamics are always at play, and figuring out how we can navigate this interaction with somebody who may be escalated or upset, and figuring out what's going to be the most helpful, largely by asking them what helps them and helping them think it through and figure out what's going to be the service we can connect you with, or the conversation we can have, or the part of your day we can help you navigate that's going to help you get out of this crisis state. So we respond to calls that officers would go to, but we bring a very different approach. And that's something that we've been doing in the Eugene area for more than 30 years now.
Thank you. Here in Portland on April 27th of this year in Lentz Park, there was a houseless gentleman by the name of Robert Delgado. And he was having a mental health crisis at the time. time and had what apparently was a replica of a gun that he was waving around in Lentz Park. Some concerned people called 911 and the police showed up and he was shot and killed very soon after the police arrived. Mm-hmm. First of all, have you heard about this incident that happened here in Portland, and what went wrong, and what would be different if Cahoots was, or an organization like Cahoots had been called to respond to this crisis?
When weapons are involved, it's always tricky because we sometimes will respond with officers if that's the case. We are, the dispatch protocols for us are typically if it is an unarmed, nonviolent encounter, it's going to come our way, but we will respond sometimes with officers to a different scenario. And it's so hard in hindsight to reflect on a situation you weren't there for to figure out exactly how it would have gone if you had been there, you know? But I do think that having access to another service that can co-respond and arrive independently, bringing our own perspective on the situation, and perhaps we know that person, perhaps we have a rapport with that person and can communicate from our distance like what the next steps need to be. I imagine if I'm in a heightened state and someone is making demands of me and has a firearm pointed back at me or pointed at me, I'm less likely to see that as help and more likely to see that as a threat and further escalate. And so what does it look like if you can see someone that you trust or have seen before and know is there to help you? What does your response look like instead, you know? And these conversations, I would love to get to the point where we're having conversations about at what level is de-escalation still appropriate, even when someone has what may or may not be a weapon, you know? There are sometimes that meeting a weapon with a weapon, I understand the linear thought process there. And Cahoots at this point is not set up to respond to calls with firearms because it's part of what has been associated with our safety. And there's not a lot of research to point at to people doing that differently, right? Like we've been showing up to weapons with weapons always. So, but I do think if we can normalize mobile crisis response and really see the value in it, there's room for conversations about how involved in those situations we get, you know?
Mm-hmm. I've heard that before the pandemic, at least in Multnomah County, about 50% of all service calls were calls involving people who were either houseless or having mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. Are those similar, are those figures comparable to Eugene?
I don't necessarily know for EPD's department for the whole city. I do know that for us, 60% of our calls are with people that are unhoused and 40% are housed. And it makes sense when you look at it from a public health perspective and you zoom out and you look at what factors are more likely to lead to a crisis. Instability in your situation is high on the list. And being able to meet your basic needs is a crucial part of planning ahead and figuring out what is going to happen for you next, you know? And so a lot of people that we respond to be that helping hand of guiding people to the next thing are struggling with those basic need pieces because we haven't built the systems around them that are going to help them do that. And so it becomes a crisis in the moment. And with that, we still respond to 40% of our people that are housed and have those pieces, but maybe are lacking different supports. I think there's no shortage of supports in our society to help prevent crisis, which is truly what I think trauma-informed, client-centered care for our community looks like.
Thank you. What are the qualifications that someone would be likely to have to serve with Cahoots, to work with Cahoots and mobile response?
That is so varied. In our medic roles, people are an EMT basic or another level of EMT. It goes up to advanced, and then we have a paramedic or nurses and varying degrees of licensure on that side. And with our crisis workers, what we ask for is at least a couple of years of experience working with people in crisis. And a lot of what it takes to do this work is a true ability to meet people where they are. And that is hard to quantify in years of education. So while we do have a range from people that don't hold any formal education necessarily to people that are licensed clinical social workers, none of those staff members are more valuable than any other. It takes all of us to meet people in the community where they're at. So at least a couple of years of work with community members in crisis, because you got to know what you're signing up for. And then on top of that, whatever you can bring is valuable. We all work together to make decisions and bring our different lenses and backgrounds. And it is part of what helps us serve the community in a productive way, is having different lenses and different layers to that education. I see a lot of models that are trying to replicate CAHOOTS, but then go off in a direction requiring fairly high levels of licensure. And that's a difference, because having all of the education components does not necessarily mean that you're going to enter the field and be able to sit with folks exactly where they are and provide that unconditional positive regard, you know? So it's, to me, I always encourage, like, there is a certain amount of experience that you need to be able to bring and a certain amount of awareness of what the work's going to entail. But beyond that, we have 500 hours of training for our new hires so that we can really help them be successful no matter what level of education or experience they're bringing in.
Part of the reason that we were having you on today was because we had received a press release from Rory, who we get a lot of information from, that CAHOOTS was requesting 5% of CSI budget funds for this upcoming budget year. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. What I noticed recently that stood out to me a lot was that Portland Street Response was getting compared to CAHOOTS by some folks in the amount of productivity versus, and that's in quotes, versus the cost, and noticing that that program was costing more than CAHOOTS. And that is when it hit me very, very hard that we have an ethical obligation to speak about our funding situation. Because if people are getting compared, if new programs are getting compared to where our program's at financially, that's not gonna work, because our level of funding is not sustainable. We currently struggle always with our funding. And it is my responsibility and our responsibility as a program to stand up and say, actually, that's not quite right. We aren't actually meeting our needs. So comparing to us is not appropriate. And it is our responsibility to advocate for ourselves. And one of the things that I was hearing from the community so much over the last year, as people have been discussing public safety and what they want it to look like, is that people want more CAHOOTS, and they really want this community safety initiative tax. It's a payroll tax. They want that to go towards what they believe is true community safety. And they want CAHOOTS to be included in that. And we had not yet asserted that we should be. So that is what I felt like it was time to do, was just acknowledge that we are underfunded, we can't pay our workers a livable wage, and we lose people for that. And so our program is unstable. We don't have the stability required to continue to grow and expand. We have calls that hold for a very long time. We have calls that hold for hours. And a crisis is urgent. That's the nature of a crisis. And we want to be able to get there, but we need to get more team members so that we can get more vans on the road, so that we can respond faster. And we won't be able to do that if we can't secure our funding to get us to a stable place where we can figure out what it takes to expand and do that very thoughtfully and meet the needs of the community at the scale that we would be able to if we were adequately funded. So I took forward this ask for funding, and hopefully we can get involved in some of the discussions at the city level about what funding is available and what would be best to support us.
Thank you. I'm listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking tonight with Ebony Morgan, Program Director of CAHOOT, Mobile Street Response in Eugene, Oregon. Ebony, can you compare, what is the difference between CAHOOT and Portland Street Response?
CAHOOTS is what I am very intimately familiar with and has been around for 31 years. And so we have a lot of, we're embedded in our community in a lot of different ways. And I think one of the things that first comes to mind when I think about the differences is just what a difference that must make. And my heart goes out to Portland Street Response and the effort that I'm sure goes into establishing your validity in the work that is so truly important. And I know that intimately. One of the differences that I've heard is that Portland Street Response is going to be funded at a better level, and that delights me. It should be, and it's super important. And I think a lot of what's going to make the response look different as Portland Street Response figures out what makes the most sense for them are differences in the city. You know, the CAHOOTS is not a cookie cutter model. And so the way that different cities embed their programs and the ways that they find to be successful are probably going to look different, because not every community has exactly the same needs. I think we'll run into a lot of the same, which are what resources are out there to support our clients after the call, like what are we able to connect you to? I think one of the main differences as well is, to my understanding, Portland Street Response was embedded into their fire and EMS response, and we are dispatched through our local police partners. And so we've found different channels for getting into that 911 response system to make sure that we are available to those calls as they are appropriate. But I think
it seems like it would make more sense to be patched in with a 911 police response, because most of the time when people are calling about someone who's houseless or having mental health crisis, they're very likely to just call 911 right away.
And I'm not sure how Portland's 911 dispatchers are set up. I know that in our area, we have a central communications team where there are different dispatchers for each entity. So police have their own and the fire department has their own, but they share a space. And so they're able to, if they need to pass something or figure that out, they can do that. And I think that makes sense. And it does make sense to me that we are connected through the police department's line because of the nature of the work, and that is where our contract is, and that is, those are the radios we're on. And but I think in some situations that is a barrier. Having to call in to the police to access the mobile crisis team is a barrier to people that have zero trust in that system and have not been, that trust has not been earned. And so we are still thinking about that. We think about that all the time. What is the right place to embed ourselves where people are going to be willing to reach out to us? Because this makes sense for our model and our operations, but there's an entire subset of people that don't trust this number to call that we aren't able to respond to the same way. So what are we going to do to remedy that? And we're having active conversations about that.
Thank you. Again, we're speaking tonight with Ebony Morgan, Program Director for CAHOOT in Eugene, Oregon. It's the Mobile Street Response. Is there a much collaboration or cross-fertilization between organizations like Portland Street Response and CAHOOT, you know, in terms of program implementation?
We have, CAHOOTS has branched off with a consulting department who is working with other areas. And I have recently gotten very excited about working with especially Portland Street Response and any others that are going to develop around us, because what has occurred to me is that we are going to be compared with each other and we have tools that we can share with each other. And if we can communicate with one another, what is helping us be successful, what we're struggling with, are they the same, are they different? How can we work together to really provide the best services to our communities that we can when they're not so far apart? And I think the more that mobile crisis response teams can work together and share information, the stronger we're going to be. I think it's really important. I think it's really important that we have conversations and try to support one another with what we know and what we've experienced, because whether we intended for this or not, I'm seeing program after program get compared to ours because we were put into the spotlight as this model, which is very exciting. And we were very happy that other areas are thinking about implementing something like it, but let's not pretend like we're perfect. Let's look at what's working and what's not, and what's working in Portland and what's not, and really figure out what the best practices are based on evidence.
Thank you. How do you navigate the complicated language of the current political landscape? You know, in Portland, the calls for defunding the police have both been praised and criticized within the community. For myself, as an abolitionist, I definitely support a decarceration and a divestment, and especially the militarization of the police. But at the same time, as a journalist, I also have a responsibility to, you know, look at all sides of an argument. And you know, as a mobile crisis response team that has to work in some direct cooperation with police units, police organizations such as the Portland Police Bureau or Eugene, how do you navigate that kind of complicated language? Because you're obviously aiming to provide a service that kind of supplements and, you know, kind of redirects how people see and respond to mental health crises in their community. But at the same time, you also have to, you know, since you are utilizing the services of 911, you do have to maintain some kind of relationship with the police organizations in your area. Can you talk about walking that fine line?
Oh, I could probably talk all day about that fine line. As a person, my father died during a police encounter when I was 5. And the past year, just now having the anniversary of George Floyd's death, has been a journey for myself and for the entire community, you know? And it is what I consistently center is that this is all larger than myself. It is larger than any individual. And what we're looking at is systemic levels of harm and oppression. And in the pockets that I'm in and the people that I'm talking to, that component is not up for debate. That can be seen. What it is we do about that is where a lot of different branches happen, right? And not everybody believes in systemic oppression, I suppose, but I just assume that level. And from there, we all just want to see a better world, right? We're all human. It's just a matter of what we think that safer, better world looks like. And some people believe that is law enforcement, and some people believe it will never be law enforcement. And it is not up to me to decide on that topic. What it's up to me to do is provide options and say, what about this? And when someone says defund the police, it makes our police partners uncomfortable, right? They have budgets and they would like to operate with their budgets. And I get that. But what I see is fund other things. How do we fund other things? And we are proven to be effective. And by EPD's own analysis, we divert 5 to 8% of their calls. And we take 20% of the incoming calls. It's just that a portion of those are not something they would respond to anyway. And so we're meeting unmet needs in the community and taking a portion of their calls, saving them more than $1 million a year in police officer wages, and saving those thousands of people from having an unnecessary encounter with law enforcement, and saving law enforcement from having to respond to calls that they don't need to be responding to. It is really ultimately a win-win scenario. And when I look at it that way, the language becomes easier to navigate in a way that isn't isolating or alienating any one audience. It's really just about what if there's an objectively better way to respond to people in our community in these pockets. And maybe this conversation then becomes, what about this other pocket? And what about this other pocket? And how many of those pockets can be embodied by different types of responses so that officers can focus on what it is they're specifically trained to do when violent encounters take up such a smaller portion of things they actually respond to? What if they could just get very good at that? And there's all these other things that people who want to show up for the community in different ways can try to take on. Who does that harm ultimately? If we can find other ways to respond to things that are more cost effective and people aren't carrying weapons, there's no risk for that kind of harm. I think to me, it seems like a very simple solution. And that is what I try to root in, because the language can be so divisive. And regardless of how I feel about it as an individual inside, what I'm trying to do is support our communities in recognizing that there's hope for other ways.
Ebony, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I was wondering if you could tell me one Kahoot success story. You don't have to disclose personal information, but can you think of like maybe one story that you've participated in or heard about within your organization that just is really touching or has really illustrated how important Kahoot is?
You know, one of my first calls fully trained was with somebody who did have a weapon inside of their space, and officers weren't sure what to do about it because they didn't want to make entry and make it worse, and they didn't want to just leave it, but it was kind of a, what can we do if this person won't talk to us? And my shift partner said, well, what if they would talk to you, Ebony? And I was like, okay, cool. I'll call them. And I called him on the phone and I set the tone for that interaction. I said, if you are willing to come out without any weapons in your hands, there are already police officers up there. They're going to make sure that you are not armed in any way. And then it can be you and me. Then you and me can have a conversation and we can figure out where we want to go from here. Because the person was had only expressed being a danger to themselves. So ultimately, I don't feel unsafe with that person. They're not saying they want to hurt somebody else. So I convinced that person to step away from their weapon and come out of the space, and met them where they were. And the officers patted them down and we walked out together. No handcuffs, no force, all choice. And they said, can I smoke a cigarette? I said, absolutely. I'm on your time. This is about getting you what you need to be safe today, and you can do whatever you need to do. And we kept our own distance, had our own conversation. I learned a little bit more about this person, and we had what I felt was a fairly productive interaction, and we went to the hospital to be safe for that day. That is what we found to be the best solution for that moment. And being able to do that while officers stood by, and ultimately, you know, he didn't try to bring the weapon out with him. He came out by choice and he came out unarmed because I was able to be there as a different solution. I was honest from up front. I said, there are a lot of officers out here and I'm sure that would make you pretty nervous, but I am not one. And if we can do it this way, you and I can work this out together. And that worked. And to me, that's everything, you know? That person didn't wind up getting hurt that day. The officers didn't have to get involved with that person. I think that was a win-win. Ultimately, not every story is a success story, but we try really hard, and that one's enough. That makes every single bit of work I've ever done worth it, you know?
Thank you. We've been talking tonight with Ebony Morgan from Kahoot, Mobile Crisis Response in Eugene, Oregon. Ebony is the program director. Ebony, if people want to find out more about Kahoot and the good work that you do, where can they go to find out more about it?
You can find us on Instagram and Twitter if you want to see some of what we're posting about. And then there's also a website for us on the Whitebird Clinic website, which is whitebirdclinic.org.
Thank you, so, Thank you so much, Ebony. It's really been a pleasure having you on Prison Pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about